The Morning Rush podcast is brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Freedom Reserve. Please drink responsibly.
They're going to run and get that boot.
This game's still alive and the Hawks have a first down.
Who wants to talk football?
It's Ronnie Wingo, number 20. Touchdown, Arkansas.
They talked the bar.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast.
The Arkansas going into SEC play was not going to be able to really match up with a lot of the teams. You also felt like they were not going to be an NCAA tournament team. But once they got off to that really good start, they got the win against Indiana, and then you had some predictors like Andy Katz or Joe Lenardi or whoever start saying that Arkansas is going to be in the field of 68 and their very early predictions for the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. The expectations have risen, where before the season started, it's like, no, they're not going to make the NCAA tournament. It's going to be more of a rebuilding year. But then when you start getting national guys talking about it and saying, yeah, no, Arkansas is looking like an NCAA tournament team, then in the fans' minds, it's automatically, all right, that's the expectation now. It was going to be just to maybe make it into the NIT, at least have a winning record, be okay. But now it's gotten to a level to where if Arkansas does not make the NCAA tournament this year, it's a failure of a season. Which, not to say it wouldn't be before, because a lot of people feel like Arkansas should always be in the NCAA tournament. But right now, though, the expectation has been elevated just because of the way they started off the season and how they have. I know that they've lost two games, but two games by a combined 3 points, where it's not like they're getting blown out against it. And so since that expectation has been elevated, you're going to be looking at to where fans are going to get here in conference play and say, all right, show us something.
So let's assume for a second you end up winning these final three games of non-conference play heading into league play. That would put you at 10-2. Now, what you're saying is they're a bucket away in two games from being undefeated.
Yes.
12-0. Would this team be better off 12-0? And I know there's never a great case to make that you're better off losing. So just hold on with me here. But would the expectations of a 12-0 team, the talk of the fan base, the expectations of, Clark, I think this is a Sweet 16 team. I mean, it would really get unrealistic.
Yes.
If this team was 12-0 right now. I'm not saying you're better off at 10-2, but in some ways I think you are.
Mm-hmm.
Because the expectations, I think, are closer to reality right now at perhaps a 10-2 record. If it was 12-0, I think people would really be thinking this team is a much better team than it is in reality.
Yeah, because, I mean, well, you're sitting at 7-2, obviously. And then
right,
we're assuming
these last three wins.
Right. So, and if you did that, also, you would be in the top 25.
Right.
You would be maybe even top 20, top 15, depending on what everybody else does. Because if you just look at the RPI, which is something important in college basketball, strength of schedule and everything, Arkansas has a pretty strong RPI at this point. So when people would look at that, they would have them in the top 20, somewhere around there. And then, you talk about really elevating the expectations. Because if you would have made those free throws down the stretch, like against Texas, or even made a few more against Western Kentucky, and you're undefeated even at 9-0 right now. I mean, Tommy, we're talking about people not only thinking and having that expectation, but also just being so pumped up, saying that, all right, this is great, man, Mike Anderson, da-da-da-da, which I'm not saying that it won't end up being in a great situation for Arkansas at the end of the year. I'm not saying that it will be a failure or even comparable, but you got to remember, folks, and always take this into consideration, Arkansas only lost one non-conference game in John Pelfrey's second year where they beat Oklahoma and Texas, and everyone thought that everything was going to be golden and how they were going to be a team and that was going to make it to the Elite Eight and John Pelfrey was the next coming. Well, conference play hit, and that's where it all changed. Now, different coach, Mike Anderson, is 20 times the coach that John Pelfrey is, so I doubt that happens. But SEC play, conference play, is where you really determine how good a team is. Non-conference play doesn't mean anything. I know you still got to win the games. I know that Arkansas has had a pretty decent schedule, and they've performed very well in a lot of these games. But SEC play, especially given how good the SEC is this year, by and large, that's when you're going to figure out just how good this team really is. And their test against Georgia Tech tonight, I know it's always funny to mention as a Power 5 team, but that's what they are. They're in the ACC. They are familiar. They're not going to be scared of going on the road against an Arkansas team because they probably go on the road against North Carolina, go on the road against Duke, go on the road against Syracuse, go on the road against really good teams year in and year out. So it's not going to be anything new to them. But you're just hoping that Arkansas can – they didn't play very well against Texas San Antonio down in Little Rock. They, of course, had that rough game against Western Kentucky. If they can just take care of business the rest of the way in non-conference and get this win against Georgia Tech tonight, then they're going to be right back on track. But it's all going to come down to that SEC play. How can Arkansas stack up with the rest of the teams? If they can just win their home games, steal a few on the road, they'll be in the NCAA tournament. Because I think we even talked about it, Tommy. If you went out the non-conference way and say if they went 10-8 in SEC play, I feel like that's good enough to get into the tournament. Right there.
10-8.
10-8, yeah. So saying that you have... obviously,
we've just been on a conservative projection of 9-9. You know,
because you feel like, I mean, Arkansas, for you feel like they'll at least go now, 500 in conference.
Here's what I'm not, and Ty, I heard you and Phil talking about this yesterday. I'm not as familiar with it. Maybe you can, because I know you follow a lot of the metrics that go into measuring how good teams are. This new Nets rating that the NCAA is using, I know there's a different way that the committee and the NCAA is looking at teams this year. And I think that's one thing as we get into conference play, fans need to understand there's a little bit different way of looking at this stuff versus the old school just only looking at RPI and strength of schedule and some of these
quadrant one, quadrant two.
Yeah, exactly. Those type of things that we've talked a lot about in February and March, and we'll talk a lot about the things, but some of the metrics have changed this year, right?
Yeah, and they have. In the first release of the rankings, ticked a lot of people off because there were some teams up top that people were like, how is this team initially in the first top 10 in the net rankings? And a lot of people think it's going to like even out, and by the end of the season, it's going to look better. But the biggest thing that Phil brought up yesterday is the net evaluates how much you beat a team by. The RPI, it would top off at 10 points. Like, that was once it hit 10, that was like the extent of how bad you could beat a team that it would measure by. But this metric allows the full capacity of a win and whatnot. So people were kind of interested because
up to 10 points, or
that was the RPI, but now it's changed where it can actually evaluate full measure wins.
Well, because I'm looking at it right now because I had heard about this, and here's how the new barometer for the committee will be. It includes game results, obviously, strength of schedule, game location, scoring margin, like you said, but it says here on the NCAA website, it says it is capping it at 10 points per game here in the net evaluation, and then it has net offensive and defensive efficiency. So they may have kept it the way that the RPI had it, where
it
was still, there's still 10 points per game as a point of margin. But either way, I mean, though, I guess that's a good indicator and a good barometer of what you're trying to figure out of just how good teams are, especially in NCAA. Because let's be honest, I mean, how many was there? 320 college basketball teams in the Division 1A? I mean, that's
a lot. Yeah.
That's a ton. And so you have to have some type of barometer this, I think, to just make sure that you get the best teams in the field.
In football, it's a reasonable thing for the committee to see all of the teams that are in the hunt. Mm-hmm. In basketball,
there's no way.
There's no way because, A, there's 68 spots in the field. Now, what is it, 32 are automatic bids? So they really only have
conferences,
to...
conferences, yeah.
Right. It's 30-some-odd automatic bids, so you got 30-some-odd...
At large.
You're really only evaluating those teams. But you got to evaluate them all because you don't know who's going to win a conference tournament. And let's face it, we saw it last year with a Missouri Valley team making the Final Four. This isn't football where your champion is going to come from one of five conferences.
Mm.
And perhaps in football, one of two or three conferences. In basketball, getting to the Final Four is a feat and an accomplishment in and of itself. Not that football getting to – it's just different. I'm just saying –
I mean, Loyola Chicago
it's a
made
much
it.
It's a much broader deal. And I don't know that Missouri Valley is really a mid-major anymore. That's a good basketball league
is.
And has been for a long time. But my point is the committee has a lot more work, a lot more observing, a lot more study to do in this sport than you do in football.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm with you on that. And I'll be interested to see how this net evaluation works and if it really plays out and see if it plays out in Arkansas's favor, because that's going to be an important thing, too.
Arkansas's home for the best sports talk. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Adams with it at the 45. Adams skip it. Adams gets outside. Watch out. Hits the sideline. The Jet. Touchdown, Arkansas.
We are now joined by Andy Demetra, the voice of the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, as Arkansas will be taking on Georgia Tech tonight in Bud Walton Arena at 8 p.m. Andy, really appreciate you joining us this morning. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, anytime. And obviously, we've been talking a little bit about this game, and we really need your help to help us and Razorback fans know a little bit more about Georgia Tech. Obviously, they're sitting at 5-4. They had a tough loss previously against Gardner-Webb, and Arkansas's kind of they had a sluggish game against Texas San Antonio and Western Kentucky with that loss. So both these teams are kind of looking to bounce back a little bit. But looking at Georgia Tech and what they've done so far this year, and kind of the expectation that was given to the Yellow Jackets. Is this about what was expected? Was it going to be as kind of a slow start? Just tell us about the current situation there with Georgia Tech.
Yeah, you know, I think Josh Pastor said at the outset of the season that his team's best basketball is going to come as the season goes on. Because remember, they anticipated having Josh Okogie back this year. And Josh, who averaged 18 points a game last year, declared for the NBA draft, basically played his way into the first round through his pre-draft workouts. And so this would be a completely different looking team had Josh Okogie stuck around for his junior year. It's backcourt heavy. They do have a pretty good emerging big man in James Banks, who is a transfer from Texas, who got his eligibility to play immediately one game into the season. They're not shooting the three ball as well as Josh Pastor thought they would based on the personnel that he had, what he saw of him throughout the preseason. So that's an area that I know has frustrated Josh, but they're a team that plays towards the defense. Much like shooters have bad shooting nights, good defenses have bad nights. And that was the case on Monday versus Gardner-Webb. But Georgia Tech still began the week top 10 nationally in defensive efficiency. They're a top 5 field goal percentage defense. And they try to play through their defense and be defined by how they play on the defensive end.
Playing the ACC, so you see a lot of great venues. But what's Josh said leading up to this and coming to Bud Walton, one of the better venues in the SEC? What's the expectation for the venue and the atmosphere that Georgia Tech believes they'll face?
Well, Josh has never been to Bud Walton Arena either. In fact, I kind of had to school him up because I spent 7 years as play-by-play voice of South Carolina. So, I said, gosh, this is probably the fifth or sixth time I've been to Bud Walton. So they know the kind of pressure and intensity that this venue presents. You know, Georgia Tech is young in some areas, but they're experienced in others. It's going to be one of those situations where their ball handling has to be sharp, their communication has to be good. You know, to be a little more backcourt heavy, I think might behoove them tonight. But I know Josh is excited about coming in here. Yeah, I haven't been to Cameron, haven't been to the Smith Center in Chapel Hill, haven't been to some of these other really loud arenas in the ACC. This is going to be good preparation for Georgia Tech with conference play a couple of weeks away.
Speaking with Andy Demetra, voice of the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets right here on the Morning Rush. Now, you said that you're pretty familiar with Bud Walton, obviously, and I know that you've been able to go and see some games that Arkansas has played in and see a little bit of Mike Anderson. But here they are. They felt like it was a rebuilding year, but a lot of expectations have been risen with the good start that Arkansas has had that they need to make it back to the NCAA tournament. Just what do you think about Mike Anderson and the job that he's done at Arkansas? Because he's been there for a while, and a lot of people feel like he may have should have made it to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. Hasn't gotten to that point yet, but what do you think of the current state of Mike Anderson in the Arkansas Razorback basketball program?
Well, clearly he has some really good players and identified some really good prospects. I've been really impressed on tape with Joe. I mean, Gafford's a lottery pick, and he's following that lineage of Bobby Portis and other guys who will be making a lot of money professionally for a living. And, you know, this might sound superficial to some, but I really believe in it. Mike Anderson gives Arkansas a very distinct identity in the realm of college basketball with the pressing and the trapping. And, you know, week in and week out, you're facing teams and you kind of know who they are. And some guys, they just don't have a distinct identity. Arkansas does. And I guess as a broadcaster, I admire that. To go to the NCAA tournament each of the last 2 years, that's not something you can take for granted, especially from the standpoint of Georgia Tech, which is still searching to get back to the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2010. So I think he has this program on really solid footing, and it ain't fun to play, and I can assure you guys it probably won't be fun to play coming off a game on Monday for the Yellow Jackets.
give us your assessment of the ACC this year and how you think it will stack up amongst the best in the country. It's generally right up there. And then also your thought of the SEC. Piggyback on that as well, because Georgia Tech got to see Tennessee earlier this year. So you've got a taste of what this league's best has to offer. How do you think the two leagues compare?
Sure, and I'm glad you mentioned that Tennessee game, because even though Georgia Tech lost that one, they held Tennessee to its lowest efficiency rating of the season against the Volunteers. And I can give you an illustration of what Georgia Tech does well on defense. They'll hustle. They'll mix up their defenses a lot. You'll see them play some 1-3-1 zone liberally. Their guards have to rebound in order for them to have success, but that just gives you a window into how good defensively Georgia Tech can be when everything is clicking, even though they didn't get that win. The ACC, to your question, it's not just Zion Williamson. It's not just Duke. It's not just North Carolina. The middle of this conference is really, really, really good. Florida State, Virginia Tech, I think, is one of the most underrated teams in America. Yeah, they're in the top 25, but there might not be a better long-range shooting team than Virginia Tech. And even a team like Pittsburgh, which has a brand-new head coach that everybody thought was going to be the dregs of the league, they're playing really well. There's just no breathing room whatsoever in the ACC. Georgia Tech is a perfect example last year. They had a first-round NBA draft pick. They had a two-time ACC All-Defensive player. They had three guys who finished their careers as 1,000-point scorers. Georgia Tech finished 6-12 in the ACC. It's just a really rough neighborhood, and that figures to continue this year. As far as the SEC goes, you know, I feel like Kentucky's going to be there when it's all said and done. Tennessee is going to be the class of the conference. I'm really excited to see if Arkansas can mix it up. I know they're picked preseason 10th, but just the way they've been shooting it, Evan Gafford is that guy who can be a mosquito lamp inside. I think it's going to really benefit them. And, you know, Auburn's another team that Georgia Tech faced in the private scrimmage, and I know they came out really impressed with the Tigers' personnel. I was really glad, having been in this conference for 7 years, to see so many SEC schools represented in last year's NCAA tournament, to see the respect that the SEC, I thought, was long overdue for, and I think it's going to be another really solid year in the league. Just, you know, when you get 1-8, there's going to be a lot of tough outs night in and night out in the SEC.
Andy, for the Razorback fans, who is going to be the main player for Georgia Tech that they're going to have to watch for, and also the player that Arkansas is going to have to make sure that they slow down in this game for Georgia Tech?
You know, that's a good question, because I think Georgia Tech is a balanced team. There's no one guy who's going to take over and get you 6, 8, 10 points in a row. Jose Alvarado is a point guard. He is the personification of a tough, gritty New York point guard. He's not afraid to crawl up underneath guards and be a pest on the defensive end. He hasn't shot the three as well as he's capable of. James Banks is the guy who's really come on. 6'10", 240. He's a great rim protector. You know, he can be a presence underneath with his shot blocking. But, you know, as a team, Georgia Tech, and I hate to keep banging on this, but they haven't shot the three well, and they're much more capable of doing that. Curtis Haywood II is a guy from Oklahoma who I think could be a 41-42% three-point shooter, and he's in the low to mid-30s. Brandon Olsen is among the team's leading scorers. He's a graduate transfer. He's just a sound, solid player, does everything good, doesn't do any one thing great, but you know what you're going to get with him every single night. It's a balanced team, but Alvarado and Banks are the guys that, as an Arkansas fan, your eyes will probably be drawn to the most.
All right, last one before I let you get out of here, Andy. I know that you've been to Fayetteville a few times. When you come to Fayetteville, where do you have to go? Is there a particular restaurant? Is there something you have to do? I know you love the city, but what do you do once you get to Fayetteville?
You know, it's interesting because oftentimes, when we were in South Carolina at least, we were staying out at Rogers, and so only recently was I able to actually pass by Dixon Street and know what that was all about. And so I love at least where we're staying now, because you get to see the campus a little more and just some of the areas around Fayetteville. So I can't say I'm the most cultured person when it comes to experiencing Fayetteville, but I'm glad that we have a little extra time before we tip off today so I can actually explore the city. But I do know one thing: once that ball's tipped off and you're inside Bud Walton Arena, there are a lot of places that look much better by comparison, because Bud Walton Arena, it can be a tough place to play. I know that firsthand.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be a great game, that is for sure. Andy Demetra, voice of the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets basketball team. You'll hear him on the broadcast tonight there locally in Georgia Tech. Really appreciate you joining us, Andy. Great stuff, man. Have a great call tonight, and looking forward to catching up with you later down the road, my man.
Not a problem. Let's do this again.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas, 80 yards.
Can we end the discussion already on the state versus pizza? Because, I mean, this one.
Well, this is not even a discussion. This is just Ty's lack of judgment and immaturity.
I mean, you're failing on these polls, man. Everything that you keep throwing out there.
Yeah, the worst hair on the show yesterday. Now you're. And that was with you cheating. He's got like 10 burner accounts that he votes in.
All right, let's not blow this out of proportion.
And.
Oh, man. Yep.
Now you're trying to claim. And I love pizza.
I do too.
Had some Gassano's earlier this week. It's outstanding. But if presented the choice, I'm taking the bone-in ribeye like 100 out of 100.
You know what? To each his own, man.
Yeah. I do it. 73% of you, by the way, say steak.
Yeah. Just I wonder about the other 27%.
You know, if this was a presidential election, they would. You know what they call that? They'd call that a landslide. Mm-hmm. So just we'll have some fun with that. All right, let's go ahead and get into What's Your Beef Wednesday.
What is wrong with you?
I want to complain.
I'm complaining.
I want to complain.
I'm complaining.
I want to complain.
It really pisses me off today.
To simply listen to people whine and complain.
I'm angry. I'm spitting angry. I'm like a tornado of anger. Swirling about. My heart rate is dangerously high right now.
I'm complaining because not enough people tickle, hug, or smile.
I'm so mad I could eat ball bearings and crap BBs.
It's time for What's Your Beef Wednesday.
All right, it is time for What's Your Beef Wednesday. And, of course, if you want to play along and give us who or what you're beefing with, be sure to call in 877-377-6963 or tweet us at HitThatLineAR. So I'll go ahead and kick us off. Now, Evan called in from Fayetteville, stole a little bit of the thunder from me when talking about dads dressing up in full uniform and taking pictures. I think it's creepy and weird. Just saying. But that's neither here nor there. I'll move on and kind of give a different perspective, but it's still on the same basis of recruiting when it comes to my beef.
Mm-hmm.
I beef with recruiting in general. I hate recruiting. I do. I understand why it's important. I understand why we have to talk about it when we're covering particular teams and why ESPN covers it, while there's things like Rivals and 247, why they all exist. I totally and completely understand, and I get it. But I hate it. I'm normally somebody who enjoys looking at all different types of outlets when it comes to college football specifically. I enjoy seeing development. I enjoy seeing teams and how they stack up. I'll give you the college football playoff thing all day long. We can debate about that. I love college football and everything that comes with it except recruiting. And the main reason I do hate recruiting so much is because in the end, it doesn't matter. In this regard, well, let me finish. It doesn't matter. Because if you have a great coach, and if you have a great coach that's able to get great players, and that great coach with those great players can make a great game plan and have a great play calling system and have a great culture, guess what? You will be a great football team. But the people that obsess with these rankings in recruiting is nauseating. There is not a speck of difference between being the 17th ranked recruiting class and the 12th recruiting class. There's not. There's not. The only thing that you can make an argument for is being a top five recruiting class. Because as history has shown and as studies have shown, if you have a top five recruiting class, almost every single time you're going to be competing for conference championships, national championships year in and year out. Now, we know that there's been some situations like Tennessee or like Texas A&M where they've had that, but they haven't been able to compete. But it wasn't because they lacked talent, it's because they lacked competence at the head coaching position. So that matters in the top five. But if you have the number 10 or the number 15 or the number 20 or the number 25 recruiting class, whatever it is, to me, that does not define how good of a program you are, how good of a team you're going to be. What defines that is how good of a coach you have, him getting the right guys in for the system that he has in place and being able to execute that system at a high level. I'm telling you, when Arkansas was in its heyday, when everyone looks back at Arkansas and that 21-5 win-loss record that they had in two seasons under Bobby Petrino, show me where their recruiting class was the best of all time. Show me where they were ranking in the top five, top 10. They didn't. You know why? Because they had a great coach with a great setup and a great execution plan that they were able to carry out and be successful. That's what it's about. So those of you who get so wrapped up into recruiting rankings and where you're at and how it's a failure or a success depending on what number is next to your name, I can't stand it. Don't worry about it. Don't sweat about it. Don't freak out when a kid that you thought was coming to your school doesn't come to your school and start tweeting at him. Don't do these things. Worry about the results on the field. If the results on the field aren't there, then that's what you panic about. That's what you care about. That's what you start losing your mind over. The stuff here in the early signing period on where kids are deciding to go to school, stop. They may or may not pan out. They may or may not be good. Worry about on-the-field results. Put your passion and emotion into that, and don't worry about this crap that's going on today. That's what I'm beefing with today.
I went recruiting with mine today since it is the early signing period beginning underway, and we touched on this yesterday, and I want to touch on it again, is where the early signing period is at.
Yes.
In December, who does that benefit? Benefits high school coaches and college coaches. More so college coaches, I think, to some degree. All of these colleges and, you know, all these people have these mission statements and all these, you know, to define their purpose. And all these institutions, it's all about the student athlete. Yet when it comes to setting things like early signing periods that I believe would more benefit the student athlete, the high school student athlete, to sign when? Prior to their senior year, if they choose. They're not forced to, but if they had the option to do it and get their recruiting out of the way so they could focus on nothing but high school football their senior year, not have the phone calls, not have the postcards, not have the visits, not have the all of the stuff that goes along with being a highly recruited athlete. If you know you want to go to Alabama, shouldn't you be able to decide, I don't know, August 5th, I want to go to Alabama and make it official? I would think other college coaches would want this as well so they could take, you know, Joe Bob Smith off the board.
Yes.
He's going to Bama, and we know he's going to Bama. Take him off the board. But yet we can't do that. We're going to wait till December, just 60 days or less than 60 days ahead of National Signing Day, officially in February, for the early signing period. Who does that benefit? The high school programs to make sure that guy doesn't take his senior year off, low for mail it in. And the college coaches, that way if a guy gets injured or doesn't perform well, you can rescind that offer. It's not in the best benefit of the kid, in my opinion.
Doesn't seem to be with the current setup. No protection.
I have
there.
A little bit of beef with the fact that you talk out one side of your mouth with everything over here to serve the student athlete. But yeah, we don't pass rules that would maybe benefit the student athlete.
No, they're there to benefit the thing.
And I just come at it from the angle that you could eliminate all the distraction going into your final season of high school football by being able to declare, I want to be an Arkansas Razorback. I want to be a Tennessee Volunteer. Whatever it is. You should be able to do that early.
I agree.
Ahead of your senior year.
Players should be protected a little more coming out of high school for that reason right there.
There is no protection for the player.
I know. There's not anymore. That's what's said, and I completely agree with you. Let's get some phone calls in here for their beef. Let's go to Hogslop. He's in Baton Rouge. What's going on, Hogslop?
Guys, how are we? Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas to you. Merry Cajun right. Christmas in Baton Rouge.
You're right about that. Don't get me started on our helmet stickers. I won't be talking about that kind of beef. I can go on all day about it. But whatever happened to running out to hell's bells? Whatever happened to finding a guy like Dennis Johnson and finding a song like Go DJ that got the entire stadium involved on kickoffs and running out? Whatever happened to getting 90-year-old women losing their mind
to the Hogs running out to Hell's Bells. There's nothing like that anymore. You see schools like South Carolina and Clemson running out to these just insane songs, these insane music. The band's rocking. Down here at LSU, oh my gosh, Colin Baton Rouge, it's incredible. Whatever happened to Hell's Bells? I mean, when I get pumped up and I want to run through a wall, I turn on Hell's Bells and I think back to growing up when Darren McFadden and Felix Jones and Peyton Hillis used to run out to it.
Yeah. I think Virginia so Tech comes out to what, Enter Sandman?
Yeah.
Enter Sandman,
Get you hyped
Blacksburg.
Up, man.
Yeah.
I wish Arkansas had a song.
Very hyped
get,
up.
Yeah, I wish Arkansas had a song that you could get hyped up to, but...
It used to be Hell's Bells.
Yeah, no, I mean, it used to be. They used to have that.
Are you saying it would play right after the team ran through the A? I mean, you obviously have the fight song as the team comes out onto the field. You're talking about when they go from the sideline out for the kickoff.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah, no, I'm with you because that song does get you pumped
up.
I'm
telling you, there's some guys listening right now that have been there for decades, we'll just say.
Mm-hmm.
And if you suggested that the fight song not be played while they run through the A,
players on the other team used to soil their pants and have to go change in the locker room when they heard Hell's Bells play.
Oh, I hear you on there. Well, we appreciate you calling in Hawks up and giving your beat.
Or maybe hopefully it was Darren McFadden that made them soil their pants.
I'm about to say, because here's the thing, it's always better when you're good.
Yeah.
Like the uniforms in 2010 under Arkansas were the best. Why were they the best? Because they were good. Or in 2006, why were they the best? Because Arkansas was good in them. That was the only thing. So, do we have time to squeeze one more quick phone call? Let's do that. Don is in Greenwood. What's going on, Don?
Hey, guys, my beef ain't got nothing to do with football.
Okay.
It's got to do with you, Santa Claus. I'm coming for you. I've been covering you for 30 years. If you don't show up at my house, I'm going straight to jail. I'm going to find you, and I'm going to punch you in the nose. I'm tired of covering for you. Beware, fat man. You've been warned.
Ooh.
We'll see you, boys.
Thanks, Don.
Sound a little serious.
Shouldn't that be a crime right there for threatening Santa Claus?
Terroristic threatening of Santa Claus here on the morning.
We need Officer Brady
right on the morning
here.
Rush.
What in the world?
Put out a warrant.
Man.
South Sebastian County.
Kind of feeling a little uneasy over here, a little uncomfortable.
A little pressure on Santa Claus.
Don's over here coming in blazing on What's Your Beef Wednesday.
Been covering for you for 30 years.
Hey. Oh.
It's your turn to do something, Santa.
Man. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm sure Santa's listening, too, so he better step his game
Santa
up.
Santa always listens to the Morning Rush.
That's right, on the daily. Got to figure out who's not
hit
in that
line. com. He's streaming live at the North Pole.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.